Samir Dutien. Welcome to CBS Mornings on the Go. Ahead on this Friday, August 7th, a truly shocking story. Did an organ donation group take organs from people who were still alive? That's the allegation. We've got the story, and we'll talk to Dr. Celine Gounder about how it could have happened. Plus, what is this year's Song of the Summer? We've all got opinions, but an expert tells us there are some clear winners. We'll be the judge of that. And Ted Lasso is back after 3 years away. We've got two of the stars, Hannah Waddingham and Juno Temple, right here in Studio 57. We'll talk about what to expect in season four, including what's happening with the love stories on the show. All that and more right now. We've got a really shocking story that involves organ donation. The government is moving to shut down a nonprofit after allegations arose that some organs were taken from patients who were still alive. Meg Oliver has that story.
When an organization entrusted with the gift of life repeatedly puts patients at risk, the federal government has the duty to act.
HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on Wednesday announced his department was decertifying an organ procurement organization, or OPO, called Network for Hope, citing a federal review of 351 cases where organ donations were authorized but not completed. Nearly a third showed cause for concern. The review found with at least 28 cases where the patients may not have been deceased at the time organ procurement was initiated. That includes T.J. Hoover, a would-be donor who was hospitalized in October 2021 following a cardiac arrest.
He was thrashing, crying, and grabbing the doctor's hands to stop him. Even after those signs, the organ procurement process continued.
Hoover's sister, Donna Rohrer, alleges their family had initially agreed to withdraw life support after they were told he was brain dead. But the federal review of Hoover's case suggests the next day, hospital and organ procurement staff documented improving neurologic function. One day after that, records show Hoover became conscious during a donor-related heart evaluation and had to be sedated and paralyzed so the procedure could continue. That evening, the review says doctors were preparing to remove his breathing tube when Hoover became agitated and they stopped the process. Hoover ultimately survived, and in congressional testimony last year, a whistleblower said the OPO had violated its standards.
The case should have been halted immediately once neurological function improved.
At the time, the OPO said its staff was following approved protocols, and on Wednesday, Network for Hope CEO said his organization would appeal the decertification. For CBS Mornings, I'm Meg Oliver.
CBS News medical correspondent Dr. Celine Gounder has reported on this system for over the past year. She's also editor-at-large for public health at KFF Health News and joins us now. So, Celine, how is brain death supposed to be determined and what appears to have gone wrong, specifically in T.J. Hoover's case?
So brain death is actually a series of tests. So a clinician examines the patient. If they're on a ventilator, you take them off the ventilator to see if they can spontaneously breathe, so without the assistance of the ventilator. And then a second physician confirms it. But in the case of T.J. Hoover, none of that happened. Mm. And he was on a different organ donation track, something newer called donation after circulatory death. In other words, after your heart stops. He woke up the morning his organs were scheduled to be harvested. And the organization's own protocol said to stop everything. People did not.
Wow.
So Congress has been investigating a wider net of organ procurement organizations. What have they found?
Yeah, and I've been looking into this for over the past year. It's not just Kentucky. This is something I've seen across the organ procurement organizations across the country. In New Jersey, for example, Congress says that a patient came back to life. Leadership told staff to keep going. These nonprofit organ procurement organizations are reimbursed for what they spend, for what they do. And in 2023, HHS Inspector General said that system actually invites abuse, the way in which they charge. Mm. And look, this is not a small business. Some of these CEOs of these organizations are making tens of millions of dollars. Mm.
So then I think the question is, should we be afraid now to register to be an organ donor?
That's a good question.
And what should viewers take away from all of this now when they're thinking about it?
Look, I worry that this kind of reporting will discourage people from being organ donors. Donations fell last year for the first time in over a decade. Now, some of that is you have fewer opioid overdoses, so that leads to people being donors, right? But in Kentucky, more than 2,100 people came off the rolls as a perhaps as a result of the T.J. Hoover case, just in a period of 4 months. The answer is a system that earns back the trust. You have to behave in a trustworthy way.
Right.
And so CMS can write better rules. That's Medicare, Medicaid. They can enforce the rules better. Congress can change how these organizations are paid and immunity. House Ways and Means Chairman Jason Smith says they won't stop investigating until every bad actor is held accountable, because families deserve a system they
yes.
can trust.
Yeah. Absolutely. Dr. Gowner, thank you so much. This is such an important story.
I mean, Bruno Mars always brings the heat, but is that song, I Just Might, the song of the summer? There can only be one, folks, and it's the question music fans love to debate this time of year. So, what does it take to earn the title? Here to talk about it is Variety's executive music editor, Jem Aswad. Good to see you.
Good morning.
All right, so the debate happens every summer. What does, like, break it down for us. What does it take for a song to earn the title Song of the Summer?
It can't just be a song that's a hit in the summer, because it could be a ballad, you know, that would be something slow. They got to be upbeat. They've got to be kind of effervescent and have a kind of sparkle to them. Mm-hmm. And they've got to have little bits that, like, you can hear blasting out of a car going by, but you know immediately what song that is.
Right.
And the one you just played, it just might.
Yeah. So I hate to admit this, but I'm stuck in the 80s and the 90s. My all-time favorite song, and I play it every summer,
yes.
is Fresh Prince.
Summertime.
DJ yeah. Jazzy Jeff.
But you're cheating.
Fresh Prince. Yeah, I'm cheating. It is the perfect summer song to me.
It really is.
So I'm trying to get myself a little bit caught up to date. So let's look at Vlad's. Let's look at Nichelle's list. And I want you to give your opinion on the songs that they picked, so I can get out of my same loop of picking the same song. So Vlad, you have I Just Might.
I mean,
Bruno Mars.
Come on. Also, it samples a great song, You Make Me Feel Like Dancing, which is another summer song from the 1970s.
Of course, you hear those elements in there. Where's My Husband?
Ray.
Yeah.
I mean, those are my two. And what, Nichelle, you
Nichelle.
Had four.
Nichelle got spin that.
She well, I want you all to invite me back. That was not safe for work. So
it's
we're
okay.
just going to leave.
It's a hot song, though.
For me, it's the undisputed song of the summer.
Yeah, spin that? Yeah.
Yes.
And then you have Better Off.
Okay, yeah. okay.
My friend Lauren Elena made a great revenge anthem country music song.
Yep.
I love
yep.
it so much. For me, I can't stop playing it.
And then you got She Did It Again.
Yeah, Tyla and Zara Larson. Zara Larson speaking to the girls.
Yeah,
really,
all
no doubt.
Summer.
Really
and pretty
Ugly.
Is
I love
my
that song.
That's
a good jam. What do you think about their list?
They're all very good choices. Now, Zara Larson seems to be the artist of the summer because we've got a bunch of songs by her. There is her own song, Midnight Sun.
Yes.
You know, which has, it doesn't hurt if you mention the sun or the beach or summer in a summer song. Another one is, apologies for that. Tame Impala with Jenny, song called Dracula. You know, that's got a nice sparkle to it, you know, a nice sort of shine. Drake, STFU Janice.
Oh, I was going to say, I was going to pick STFU Janice. That was going to be my third one.
It's a hot song.
Yeah, and Olivia Dean, Drop Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know, it's a little bit out on the negative side, you know, a little innovative, a little odd, but it's got that kind of shine, that kind of sparkle.
Yeah, that pop.
Now, I've got a country song on my picks for Song of the Summer, but country music is really big, really rising. And right now in the Billboard charts, there's like 4 or 5 country music songs that are at the top. And I think Ella Langley is making a push to be the artist of the summer as well, like Zara Larson.
That's actually one of the most popular. That is probably the number one song of the year.
It is already the number one song of the year. It's like double ahead of what's behind it, which is Olivia Dean, not Where's My Husband, Where's My Man, Man I Need.
Man I Need, yeah, right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, so some of the picks were released before the summer, and I, like, in my mind, I don't often think about a song as one that has to be released in the summer. I think about it as the one that gives me the vibes, right?
The summer vibes.
Right, so, like, that's why, for me, I don't know if, for example, I was saying to these guys in the 80s, Don Henley's Boys of Summer, I don't know what year, I don't know what period it was released, but it reminds me of the summer, and I remember listening to it during the summer.
Yeah, I mean, they're usually not released in the summer. You know, a song takes a little time to get traction, especially now because TikTok picks all of our hits. You know, it's been a great sort of popularizer in that way. It's like people select what the songs in the summer are going to be. So you have something happening like Taylor Swift's Cruel Summer, which actually was not a smash until I think 6 or 7 years after it first came out, but it's perfect. I mean, it's like, how did they miss that the first time?
Yeah. All right. And a nod to Nate, summertime is, I think,
summertime is a perennial summer.
Yes, it's the perfect summer song.
And I'll put you on the spot before we go. The best decade to ever make summer songs.
Ooh. Oh, 60s.
I mean, we didn't even have to
hesitate. Martha Reeves and the Vandellas, the Beach Boys, the Beatles,
good,
yep, the Doors.
Good vibrations.
It was so good vibrations.
Songs
right.
Like
California
Fly
Girls.
In the Family Stone.
Yeah, Sly in the Family Stone.
Thank you so much for joining us. You got to come back. Talk some more music.
Love to.
Welcome back to CBS Mornings. It is time to bring you the stories that are the talk of the table this morning. And Vlad, it's on you.
Okay, I'm going to kick it off. So, is Gen Z a trend?
What do you mean?
So, they're embracing an analog trend from back in the day. Isn't that interesting?
Huh.
Right, so let me break it down. Young people are leaning into nostalgia, like playing board games and trading smartphone cameras for Polaroids. Basically, everything that we used to do before the internet, they're starting to do now.
Okay.
They're finding a fascination with it. It's all over TikTok. They're taking up journaling, making friendship bracelets, and crocheting, right? Isn't that amazing? So I have a little list if you're a Gen Zer out there.
What do you got?
You want a couple of things that, you know, make life worth living.
All right,
first one I'm on my list, old school Walkmans.
I like that.
Walkmans are still produced, but the old school ones with the cassette tape.
I like that.
And the big, like, spongy, like, headphones, very, very cool. We got, look at that. That's
I'm
very
a klutz,
cool.
though. I
boombox.
A boombox.
Boombox.
Like, that's a great
where
idea.
Where you got to play and record at the same time to
I
record
like
your favorite song on
I
the
like
radio.
That. That's a great
that's
idea.
Still. Encyclopedias.
So I don't like that one.
What? Why?
No, I'm just joking. Keep going.
So Encyclopedia Britannica, I grew up with.
What are you saying? Just read the encyclopedia?
Just whenever you have a question about something. Now, here's something interesting. Encyclopedia Britannica stopped producing them in 2012, but you can still buy the World Book Encyclopedia. And so if you've got a question, rather than looking at ChatGPT or Google, you can go and read about it the way we all did back in the day. And the last one, maps. Remember when you'd be like, if you go past the Dairy Queen, you've gone too far.
Wait, do you remember the Thomas Guide?
The when Thomas Guide.
When I first moved to Los Angeles, there was no GPS. We had a Thomas Guide, which was a huge book of maps.
Right.
You had to get it out.
You had
out
to go, and you had to
cross-reference,
like, the A and the number. And then, like, when I moved to Paris, we all walked around. This was in the 90s. We all walked around with this little, like, the version of the Thomas Guide, but for pocket size. So you'd be sitting there on the metro, like,
trying to figure out where you are.
Yeah.
I like that. Gen Z unplugging.
That's right.
I like it.
Nichelle, you're up.
Okay, so my talk of the table is a new study that has pinpointed the loudest sound in the ocean. Take a listen to this.
Mm-hmm. All right, what's going on there?
Those are the sounds of a male sperm whale flirting.
Oh!
A new study published by the New York Academy of Sciences compares the volumes of that sound to some familiar ones. A nightclub or a sporting event, they come in at 110 decibels. Thunder, concerts, and jet planes, about 120. Hmm. Jackhammers and ambulances, 130 decibels. Fireworks and gunshots clock in at about 140 decibels. And then there is the male sperm whale seeking a mate at 200 decibels.
200 dBs.
Can I speak to the male sperm whale for a second?
Yeah, do your thing.
You got the right idea, buddy. Because a woman loves to be loved loud.
Okay.
Now court me loud.
Okay.
Flirt with me loud.
I need that boom chicka wow wow music.
Talk about it.
If the love ain't 200 decibles, I don't want it.
There you go.
Okay. I'm saying
200 decibels
or higher.
That's right.
To come for you.
Stay away from me if you're not giving me 200
decibels. You got the 150, you're not in range,
buddy. Not doing it for you.
Talk that talk.
That's right.
I like that.
You got to come loud if you want.
Yeah, you're right. There you go.
All right.
And you heard it. If you're going to slide in them DMs, better leave a voice memo.
Exactly. She's going to be clocking them voice memos, too. She's got a little Geiger counter.
The male sperm whale is setting the stage.
Yeah, no doubt.
Nate, what you got?
All right, so if the words, damn, Gina, means anything to you, get ready for my talk of the table. Exciting news for fans of my favorite show, Martin. That's right, Martin. We are getting a first look at the spinoff called The Varnell Hill Show.
Did you miss me?
Did you miss me? It's the workplace comedy starring the hilarious Tommy Davidson, one of my close friends and one of the best comedians in the business. Yes. It follows his character, a talk show host, Varnell Hill, who was part of the original show and one of the most epic couple of episodes, Varnell Hill and Martin Lawrence. So the Varnell Hill Show is set to drop September 1st on Paramount Plus. So it's part of the Paramount family.
I love
it. So I can't wait. I want to get an interview with my guy, Tommy and Martin. Martin will make some guest appearances. But if you remember those episodes with Tommy Davidson and Martin.
Tommy Davidson is one of the funniest.
Oh, my goodness.
His stand-up.
Stand-up is
life itself.
I can't wait for this. I can't wait. I need a good, fresh, new sitcom. Mm.
I love that.
Giving me the 90s vibes.
I love that so much. I love everything Martin, so I'm here for it. I hope he's just as, crazy and absurd and ridiculous as he's always been.
What up?
Ted Lasso fans, it is time once again to believe in AFC Richmond. The popular show is back on Apple TV. The fourth season takes place 3 years after where we left off before. Ted Lasso takes on his biggest challenge yet, coaching a second division women's team. Getting him to take the job falls on publicist Keeley Jones, played by Juno Temple, and soccer club owner Rebecca Walton, played by Hannah Waddingham. Take a look.
Like disco balls for your feet. I hope they have the other one. Yeah, that's nice.
If it didn't have all the bits and bobs on it, who wears this?
Good morning, ladies.
Hiya.
I'm Tammy Deneen. So let me know if you two life-size Barbie dolls need a hand with anything, okay?
Thank you.
She didn't hear me, did she?
With us now are Juno Temple and Hannah Waddingham.
Morning.
Welcome, ladies.
You three are hot as hell.
Coming from y'all.
Right.
Come on now.
Look at you guys.
The heat is radiated over here.
Listen. As we would say at home, you are fit.
Exactly. I'll take that.
I'm going to take that too on a Friday.
Come on,
coming to the weekend.
Oh, it's Friday.
Okay, guys, it has been 3 years since we have seen you on our screens. We have been waiting and waiting with bated breath, asking and asking. Hannah is every time she would see me, she would run from me. She knew what we was asking.
Yeah.
I know you guys have been begging to revisit the character. So now how do you feel that you are actually giving us a fourth season and it's here?
Well, this lot kind of didn't seem to think we were doing it. And I was in some kind of weird denial. I was like, no, we're obviously doing more. Why would you not when there's just ludicrously brilliant writing?
Sure.
We're happy as clams together. So, it was a no-brainer for me.
Yeah, I found out through the grapevine first that it was happening and wasn't sure if I was going to be asked back.
I mean,
what?
Come on.
Jobs, though, too, Juno.
But it was more of, and then the media person to check in with was like, are you doing it? Because I'm not doing it without you.
Yeah, we're basically 12 together.
But
you're going to have your girl there.
Yeah.
It's true.
I've said this for so long. I mean, over the years, there's so many great things about this show, but the central figure of the show to me is the relationship.
Yes,
between
you've been saying
the
that.
Yes, it
the
is.
The love story between Rebecca and Keeley. It always has been for me.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. It's so, but it shouldn't be unusual that there's a glorious central female friendship, and I feel like writers need to lean into that a little bit more.
It's interesting to me, Juno, that you thought that this wasn't going to happen because the way the last season ended was you proposing this women's team, right?
But why would I think that would necessarily mean it
because
was going to be the next story?
Because it's a brilliant
idea.
How many brilliant ideas don't find the light, right?
Yeah,
so I feel like there wasn't that, and I don't ever want to try and pretend that I can predict what's going to happen with Ted Lasso. I just love
But it parallels our love for women's sports.
Women's sports,
right.
We're seeing that.
And if you're going to have anyone writing this, let it be one of the greatest champions of the women's game, full stop,
former
Jason Sudeikis. I mean, his dedication to raising the profile and just going all the time himself.
Mm-hmm. Authentically.
Leading
the way.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right.
If you're going to be involved in a show that has proper, authentic juices.
Have a guy who lives it.
Yeah. Right. And has been for a long time, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
And you're finding, Rebecca is finding love. We no one liked Rupert. Did we like Rupert? No one liked Rupert.
No one liked Rupert. I adored the man who played him.
He's a brilliant actor.
But not, do you know what? There was no Rebecca. That toxicity that there was without that attrition, I don't think anyone would have fallen in love with that character because you go on that journey with her.
Yes, right.
You know, but right. But now she has.
She's found somebody.
Yes, she's got a Dutchman.
A Dutchman.
Yeah. A Dutch pilot man.
Her
who speaks dirty to her.
I mean, she is literally having the time of her life, and I love the fact that they've made her more joyful. You love it,
and giddy.
You?
Oh my God, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. Yes,
is it true that your relationship started before filming?
Yeah.
You guys had a moment in the restroom?
Our relationship started in the toilet.
Right before the read-through for all of the big boss people, but it was like everyone was on Zoom.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember? So we were arriving and like, oh, wow, and it's not the actual people, it's just people, oh, my goodness. And it was a pretty packed house in that space too, and then all the Zoom faces on computers. And we ran into each other in the ladies' room washing our hands.
Yeah.
I will say it was definitely me that was like, hi, because I took one look at this extraordinary, sorry, I say spat, oh my God, extraordinary woman was like, hi. Just I'm gonna check in.
And what was your first impression of it?
It was immediate. I was like, I know I can't swear on. I was like, FB, that's Juno Temple.
Oh, man. Wow.
I mean, I mean, it was immediate, it was effortless, and, you know, this show is a joy to us, but this will remain.
Yeah. Forever.
And, you know, and as much as beautiful. We love your relationship, fans are also rooting always and forever for Keely and Roy.
And Roy.
Yeah.
Yes, and yes. I've seen 6 episodes this season so far. Episode 6.
I'm not going to lie, you've seen the most episodes out of anyone I've spoken to.
No one's seen 6.
Well, you know.
You know.
Who do you think you are? You know. But episode 6 is pivotal for Keely and Roy this season. And it kind of, a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do we have to do to get you all just to get it right?
Timing is everything, isn't it?
Okay. That's life itself, right?
That's what I mean. Timing is literally everything, including doing season 4 about a women's team.
She
what
is
a great
the
time.
I know.
I know. But
it's like a politician.
It's very much, right. It's very much about life, though, because, boy, we love you, and then we can't be with you, and we want to be with you. It just mirrors so many things about life that it's so real.
So relatable.
But you can have so many emotions that feel right with somebody, but if the timing isn't right, then the emotions won't actually feel correct or won't feel like they should be accepted or given back or,
telling you something and nothing.
This there is why this show, this is why this show is fire.
And nothing at all.
This energy.
And it's no surprise what you bring to the screen because y'all just lifted up this show.
100%.
Like, like it's never been lifted up before.
All right, guys, Juno Temple, Hannah Waddingham, thank you
no,
so
we're not
much.
Leaving.
It's on Apple TV right now. Y'all can stay.
Don't run nothing of your time. Just keep staying with
us. To do. We're literally just going to sit here.
And we do thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow in your feed and Monday through Friday on your local CBS stations starting at 7 a.m.
Paramount Podcasts.
The critically acclaimed series, Cullen from Accounts, returns for a brand new season.
You proposed to me drunk out of nowhere at my best friend's wedding.
I was being spontaneous.
You didn't have a ring. It was embarrassing.
All episodes streaming September 10th.
Still, will they? Won't they? Who cares?
But what is it?
We're friends.
We are togetherly.
We're friendly together.
With a dog.
Cullen from Accounts. New season streaming September 10th. Only on Paramount+.